Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, June 26, 2018. A top Ugandan official says his president is confident President Kiir and Riek Machar will reach a peace deal.
Now, we hope that this meeting in Addis Ababa and in Khartoum paves the way for them either to choose task forces to deal with each sticky issue.
And residents of Wau Town say government forces and rebels have been fighting for 3 days near the town.
The regime forces came with one war truck and civilian cruisers that were escorted by four pieces. This is the Wulip. So they attacked our place heavily, and in fact we sustained several injuries.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A Ugandan official says he is optimistic the warring parties in South Sudan will soon end the nearly five-year conflict. A spokesman for the Ugandan government says President Yoweri Museveni met yesterday with President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in Khartoum and will continue to engage the two leaders to reach a peace agreement. Maguma Davis Wakarinj reports for VOA from Kampala.
Ugandan government spokesman Ofwono Pondo told reporters in Kampala today Uganda welcomes efforts by President Kiir and Machar to resolve their differences face-to-face.
They have agreed to continue meeting. Now, we hope that this meeting in Addis Ababa and in Khartoum paves the way for them either to choose task forces to deal with each sticky issue and also deal with schedule. How do we cascade the negotiations over the different issues and resolve them?
President Kiir and Machar first met in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, last week but failed to reach an agreement on outstanding issues. The two met in Khartoum yesterday. During his opening remarks, President Kiir said he wants to end the suffering of South Sudanese people and is willing to compromise to reach a deal with Machar. Both men expressed hope for a breakthrough. A communique issued by regional bloc IGAD after the Addis meeting calls for President Omar Hassan al-Bashir to facilitate a second round of direct talks between Kiir and Machar to build on what was discussed in Addis. It is hoped that Kiir and Machar will work out the disagreements over governance and security arrangements. In a separate session, delegates from Sudan and South Sudan will also discuss economic cooperation between the two countries. The IGAD communique says they will also, in two quotes, discuss measures to be taken to rehabilitate the South Sudanese economy through bilateral cooperation between the Republic of South Sudan and the Republic of Sudan, end quotes. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is expected to host yet another round of talks between the two leaders in the weeks ahead. Opondo says Uganda and the region as a whole worries about the South Sudanese who have become refugees as a result of nearly 5 years of fighting.
In our case, over 1.4 million South Sudanese are in Uganda as refugees, and they're straining our resources. We would want those people to go sooner than later. And therefore, our president, our government, is putting all effort to ensure that the new impetus in mediation does not collapse once again.
The conflict has displaced more than 4 million people from their homes. About half of them have sought refuge in neighboring countries. Opondo says, as a neighbor, Uganda wants to see a stable South Sudan.
At the end of the day, what do we want in South Sudan? An effective government, preferably a government that is legitimate, that is accepted by all. An effective government means a government that is capable of protecting the people of South Sudan in South Sudan.
Opondo says Uganda will continue to engage the two leaders, whether at peace talks or on the sidelines of other international and regional meetings, to bring to an end the fighting. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And from Kampala, we go to Australia, where some South Sudanese community leaders in the Australian city of Melbourne say the conflict in South Sudan has divided the South Sudanese living in Australia along ethnic lines. Gor Nyok is the co-founder of the South Sudan Australia Peace Initiative, a civil society a civil society organization for peaceful coexistence among South Sudanese. Nyok says the church and some community leaders are organizing a conference over the weekend in Melbourne to talk about the issues dividing South Sudanese. He says he hopes the conference will unite South Sudanese living in Australia once again.
Most of the South Sudanese, whether they are in Australia or another part of the world, they are very much and having close connection with what is going on back in South Sudan. And so anything that happened, it does have impact. And, you know, the war, since it started in 2013, has had impact significantly on the diaspora. You know, the diaspora are so divided than even people that are on the ground in within the country in South Sudan. And that's why searching for unity and bringing the community together is very important. And that has been the work that we've been able to do through the South Sudan Australia Peace Initiative in the past 7 or 8 years.
Can you just tell us the extent of this lack of unity among South Sudanese? I grew up among South Sudanese, and I always know that when you are with South Sudanese, you are safe because people care for one another. Can you tell us how this has changed?
You know, political differences between leaders, it tend to trickle down into also being seen from the tribal lens. And because of the recent intensity of situation, you know, so many people have lost their family members and relatives. And there is no doubt that, you know, there has been a tribal card played in this recent deadly conflict that have occurred in South Sudan between the political leaders led by the president of South Sudan and the former vice president, Dr. Riek, and other armed opposition. This has have impact on the division within the community. Some of us here are having, you know, brothers, cousins, sisters, uncles who are affected. And that situation itself is having a direct impact, and so it has led to the communities being separate from one another and people grouping themselves. You know, you find the Nuer are, you know, mostly strongly separating themselves from Dinka, and the same thing as well with Dinka and, you know, the rest of the Equatoria want to be by themselves. And so as much as there is freedom in these Western countries, it has also created that opportunity of people wanting to be by themselves.
Let's talk about the lack of unity among South Sudanese in Australia. How has that impacted on individuals, on families, on the community as a whole?
It has a significant impact. I would say personally that, you know, I have so many friends from Murlea, from Nuer, I have been yearning to at least have this relationship back with them. So you start from this personal relationship. It has been impacted terribly. Our social fabric has been, you know, brought down. Relationship between various ethnic groups has been completely, you know, brought to an end, simply because of what is going on in South Sudan.
That's Gor Nyok, an Australian South Sudanese peace activist and co-founder of the South Sudan Australia Peace Initiative. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Melbourne, Australia. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is condemning the killing of one of its peacekeepers today. UNMIS says the attack by unidentified gunmen occurred between Yei and Lasu. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
The ONMIS Communications Office in Juba declined a request for an interview. But according to a statement by ONMIS Chief David Chira, a Bangladeshi peacekeeper was killed today during an armed attack on a United Nations convoy that was supporting the delivery of humanitarian aid to vulnerable civilians in the central Equatorial region of South Sudan. Shira says the slain peacekeeper, Bangladeshi military liaison officer Lieutenant Commander Ashraf Siddiqui, was providing protection to aid workers traveling in the area. The ONMIS chief says Siddiqui was part of a convoy led by Nepalese peacekeepers providing protection to humanitarian workers traveling from Yei to Lasu when several shots were fired at the group by unknown gunmen. Shira says the peacekeeper was hit and died from his injuries shortly afterwards. He says the Nepalese peacekeepers immediately returned fire and the assailants retreated into the forest. Shira says he deeply regrets what he calls tragic loss of life and condemned the actions of the armed group. He says it's a tragedy that Siddiqui was killed while working to help those in need and to protect the lives of others. The ONMIS chief is calling on the warring parties to refrain from attacking peacekeepers and humanitarian workers. Earlier this month, an ONMIS convoy patrolling civilians came under fire near Lir town in former Unity State. No one was injured in that incident. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
Residents say government forces and rebels were fighting outside Wau town for the past 3 days. An SPLM-IO deputy military spokesman says the fighting ended yesterday, but claims not before 18 rebel fighters died and more than 70 government soldiers were killed. Those figures could not be verified by South Sudan in Focus. A civil society activist in the town confirms fighting has continued for days, but a government military spokesman denies it. Waki Simon Mudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
The regime forces came with one warrior truck and civilian cruisers that were escorted by four NPCs. This is the Wulib. So they attacked our place heavily, and in fact we sustained several injured at the moment. But we fought back. I resisted them, burning down one APC and two cruisers.
That is SPLM-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel. What he said was an attack by government forces on rebels in Omboro village of Wau yesterday. Gabriel accused the commanders of the government forces of trying to derail the talks between President Kiir and Machar. He claims the fighting began on Saturday when, he says, government forces attacked the rebels' positions in Bagari, Ngo Halima and Bazia, then resumed on Monday when the SPLM-IO attacked the government forces. He claims the rebels killed 76 government soldiers and lost 18 of their own forces. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify these figures. Gabriel says the fighting caused many civilians to flee their homes. He claims government forces have been seen moving towards areas under the rebel control today. SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwang denies government and rebel forces clashed outside of Wau town.
I would like to describe all the allegations as unhealthy, negative propaganda and derailing the ongoing face-to-face peace talks in Khartoum. We have never been on the offensive. We have been given very clear orders by the Commander-in-Chief to remain in our defensive positions and only fight back in self-defense. We have not been going out.
Stephen Robo, Regional Coordinator of the local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress Organization in Bahr El Ghazal, confirms fighting occurred outside Wau and says yesterday civilians in Wau could hear gunfire.
We can hear the sound of guns from the town, so you can hear there's something going on at the village side because it's not so far from the town. You can hear.
Robo says Wau is quiet today and shops are open, but he says the latest fighting will discourage IDPs from returning to their villages.
Within the town, there's that kind of fear in American people. And those some IDPs who are trying that to go
to their homes. Now they feel like a little bit scared because hearing that there's the sound of gun and then confirmation that there is fighting going on, it also creates kind of fear and suspicions among the IDPs who are trying to go to their homes.
According to a statement from UNIMIS, Wau Town is hosting 178 internally displaced persons who fled their homes in 2016 and 2017 due to insecurity in areas where fighting has taken place. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wodo in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Jonglei State authorities are accusing youth from Boma State of cattle rustling. More on that when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you consider yourself an optimist or a pessimist, and why?
I consider myself as optimist because I really, really have good visions. I really have a hope for the best in the future. I really think ahead. I even dream ahead of what I can't reach, but I know with time I'll always reach there at that point.
Optimist because it is all about the positive thing, thinking about people, and it is all about thinking good things about the people.
I'm not optimistic nor pessimistic, I'll say it that way, because to be pessimistic is to always see things from a negative point of view, and optimistic is the other way around, seeing things from a positive standpoint. But I'm not positive, but let me say I have faith. I have faith because I believe in things.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today, we learn more about separation anxiety on migrant children when they are separated from their parents. President Trump signed an executive order Wednesday to keep migrant children with their parents at the southwestern U.S. border. But more than 2,000 children already are living in shelters without their families. Doctors and mental health workers are concerned that some of these children will suffer permanent damage. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
The dream of every family separated at the U.S. border is to be reunited. For a mother from Guatemala, her dream came true Friday when she was reunited with her young son. They had been separated for a month. She kissed him, wrapped a blanket around him, cried, and told him she loved him. Government video shows children being held in cages, lying under Mylar blankets. They've been placed in tents and shelters throughout the U.S., some as far away from Texas as Oregon. The American Medical Association warned that as a result of being separated from their families, these children could suffer negative health consequences that might last a lifetime. The president of the American Association of Pediatrics, Dr. Colleen Kraft, has taken an active role in speaking out for these children. She warns that children who are exposed to toxic stress do not develop language or other skills at the proper age.
It may take a long time for this trauma to be resolved and these children to be healed.
Dr. Lisa Fortuna is a psychiatrist at Boston University Medical School who works with migrant children separated from their parents. She says the family separations have been going on for some time, and it's very hard on children, no matter what their age.
I've had multiple kids tell me about sort of being, you know, feeling very cold, not eating enough, not having, you know, supports of like their parents or adults that care about them, and that was very, very distressing for them.
Caregivers at some of the facilities where the children are being held say they're not allowed to touch even very young children. Miriam Golden at the Gill Institute for Trauma, Recovery, and Education in Virginia says touch is very important, especially for small children.
When you rock a child, they can hear your heart rate, you can hear their heart rate, and it's through that co-regulation that children can be soothed.
Fortuna says a parent's touch teaches the child that they are being taken care of and loved.
It's a particularly really bad challenge for even younger children who if they're not touched and engaged with, can become despondent and have very significant developmental sequelae if they are not having the support and touch and engagement with an adult.
Without this support, children don't learn how to relate to others. They lose the ability to trust. They can withdraw and not have any reaction, even if they're reunited with their parents.
We know from science the adverse childhood experiences study that needs that children have when they are little, needs that are not met, do lead to long-term problems, not only mental health issues, but other related health issues.
Not every child will have permanent health problems, but young children are the most vulnerable, and the separation from a parent can compound the stress they may have already experienced in unsafe conditions in their home countries. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Jonglei State authorities are accusing youths from neighboring Boma State of cattle rustling in Jonglei. They say farmers are abandoning their farms for fear of more attacks by cattle raiders. Boma State's information minister says authorities are doing what they can to prevent youth from carrying out criminal activities, including child abductions. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwal Manyang says cattle raiders stole 200 head of cattle and seriously injured one person in Athoch County on Friday. She says other cattle raiders stole more than 120 calves in Bor South County on Sunday. Athoch County Commissioner Ajuk Jacob said by phone that armed Murule youth from Boma State attacked a cattle camp in his county on Friday, but did not elaborate on how he knew the youth were from Boma.
It was on 22nd around 1 p.m. that when the cattle from Pamom cattle camp went for grazing, unfortunately, the criminal from Bibo came and attacked the cattle keepers and managed to wound one person and they ran with about 200 cattle.
South Sudan in Focus cannot independently verify Jacob claims. The commissioner of Bor South County, Moses Bura-Lier, also accuses armed youth from Boma State of stealing more than 120 cattle from his county on Sunday.
Yesterday, at 10 morning hours, the bandits from Murule area, they have taken about 120 head of cattle in Sudan Safari, where there is cattle of Bor that has gone there. They are there. Having the youth are following them up to the area towards the Murule land, and they are not yet covered up to now.
VOA could not independently verify the claims made by Bure or Jacob about the alleged cattle raiders. Bure says many residents from his county have abandoned their farms in remote areas because of the insecurity.
They are disturbing agriculture. Because you cannot go to cultivate while there is insecurity in the area. You will suspect yourself to be killed. So they are the problem of the whole community, because people rely on cultivation, and there is no cultivation, there is no life.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwal says our government is concerned what she calls continuous attacks on their communities by youth from Boma State.
The government of Jonglei condemns this action from criminals from Boma. These are Murules, because I had asked them how they knew these were Murules. And they said from the language they spoke and chanting, they were clearly Murules.
Kwal is calling on Boma State authorities to do more to control their youth.
Last time, we all passed through Bor town, and he reaffirmed his commitment to work with the government of Jonglei State. But these people are on the rise, so they will always be there. But on how to get them has to be the commitment by continuous commitment by both governments of the two states.
Boma State Information Minister Teko Konyi says its government has never condoned criminal activities carried out by Boma youth in Jonglei State. Speaking by phone from Pibor, Konyi says Boma State Governor David Yau Yau is touring the border areas of Boma State to convince local youth to refrain from crossing into other states for the purpose of cattle raiding or abducting children.
At the moment, the governor is on the other side of Nanando's the area that bordering Bia, bordering Kobo and Jungle, that area, they are starting to use on the other side dialogue with them there so that they will stop them not again crossing just randomly to that side.
Last month, Boma State Governor David Yau Yau visited Bor to meet his counterpart, Philip Aguirre, to discuss how to bring peace to the region. Yau Yau said at that time that his government was committed to ending criminal activities in the region and returning all stolen cattle and abducted children.
We're really here to promise our states and our local communities that this time round we are going to initiate some new initiative toward achieving peace. We will make sure that we find every tiny child that has been taken, whether from Bo or from Akobo, from Mayot, from Pibo, from whoever. And more importantly, we are going to create a new environment. We trace all these criminals that took cows, that took children, that took everything that does not belong to them. This is our hope.
Earlier this year, South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai visited Jonglei region and ordered state governors and other top officials to take measures to prevent intercommunal violence and warned that perpetrators would be punished. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng reporting from Bor.
Sudanese authorities have repealed the death penalty for Noura Hussein, according to network media reports. Sudanese courts have replaced the death sentence with a 5-year jail term. The 19-year-old Sudanese woman was facing the death penalty in Sudan for killing her husband, whom she says was forced to marry. But she says she was being raped repeatedly and killed her husband in self-defense. The news is a victory for activists around the world who had called for authorities to free the Sudanese teenager. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Burima by Yusud Noor. You've been listening to Yusu Ndour and La Supa Etoile with the song Barima. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. We're glad you could be here. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.